Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Options Discovery. Today, I have a chance to sit down with Hillary Till. Hillary, can you tell me a little bit more about yourself and how you got to where you are today?
Yes, certainly. And so in addition to discussing my career progression, I'll also talk about the option strategies at the various firms that I've been associated with. So just starting out, I got my bachelor's and master's degrees in statistics, although in college I took more computer science classes than statistics classes. My first job was at a predecessor firm to Accenture. I worked in their artificial intelligence group designing expert systems for clients. I designed a car loan application decision-making system for Ford. That was actually a pretty interesting first job. I flew to Detroit every week, and I got to the point where I'd fall asleep before the plane would take off. So next I worked at a Chicago proprietary trading firm, and they had two floor teams for the bond options and foreign currency options. I created all their software programming in the programming language C. This particular software created the trading sheets that showed the traders across price level, futures levels, and options, how the premiums and the deltas changed. And since I was the computer person, that meant doing everything having to do with the computer, whether it's programming the inventory and pricing software down to the physical computer itself. So when the floor traders would, I mean, the clerks would kick it accidentally, apparently, would kick in the computers on the floor, I would need to show up carrying the personal computer. And then, taping it into the electrical outlet using as much black electrician's tape as possible. And I remember when I would go on the floor, it was just incredible. I mean, the amount of energy just emanating everywhere from the floor traders was such that the hairs in the back of my neck would stand up. So anyway, that was, I kind of took some notes to remember these experiences. So I remember when I interviewed at this Chicago proprietary trading firm, okay, fair enough, I was given a programming test. And then while I was being verbally interviewed, the head trader was making a paper airplane out of a Federal Express box. So I thought, oh, wow, this would be great to get a job here. And I did. And then this stint was followed by working at a Chicago bank where I maintained the software for the foreign currency options traders. Whenever the marketers needed a new complex option priced for a client, I would modify the pricing software basically by add in custom payoffs in the binomial options pricing routine. And at this bank, I also worked with three developers in the interest rate derivatives business, where we created and maintained custom software for pricing and inventory for the desk swaps, caps, floors, and swaptions business. So I was sort of in the derivatives business in Chicago, but really on the quant programming side, obviously, which makes sense. I didn't really have value-added skills when I, didn't have clear-cut value-added practical skills. So my entree into the business was programming. My husband was able to get a medical residency position at Harvard, so we left Chicago for Boston, and things change. Back in the day, downtown Chicago had an international newspaper stand, and I picked up a Boston Globe, a Sunday Boston Globe, and I was like, dozen recruiters. So I fired off my resume to a dozen recruiters, and luckily a job came through. And so I worked for Harvard's endowment, again as a quant. So I worked for the domestic and international derivatives portfolio managers, and amongst other things, I wrote the pricing software for the convertible bond options book. And then I moved from there because at long last I wanted to be a trader, and so I took a pay cut to do so. Again, things change. I found a job perusing the job section of the Friday Wall Street Journal, which at least at the time had ads for local positions. And so I became a market maker on the bank's interest rate derivatives desk. I started becoming more aware of the business side of things. It was very instructive to watch the marketers come up with seemingly unnecessarily complex structures with clients. And just so happened that with such structures, probably coincidence, one can add more margin to the transaction, since the competitive fair pricing wasn't as obvious. And Boston's business district is in a pretty small area, in downtown Boston, so it wasn't that hard to interview at various jobs during one's lunch hour. I don't know about now, but at the time there was apparently an informal non-compete arrangement between mutual fund companies, and to not poaching each other's employees. So as long as one moved to jobs that were across business types, one could still do this to advance one's career. After the Boston Bank, I went to Putnam Investments and eventually became responsible for the strategy development and execution of about $90 billion of notional of derivatives per year. I mean, this just built off of all these, derivatives experiences that I had before in Chicago and Boston. And there, I added a lot of controls to the centralized derivatives function amidst a lot of controversies at the time. Because there were a lot of derivatives blow-ups, various funds were reaching for yield, and in a low interest rate environment. And one way of increasing yield in a low interest rate environment is to basically have some short optionality within the structure and treat that as yield. But short options, and it's become volatile, become pretty tricky thing. So then following Putnam, so I'd worked in a large company, and then I still really wanted to trade. And so a colleague and I a colleague from Putnam and I went to Chicago to start a proprietary trading firm, and we focused on empirical regularities in pockets of predictability in the commodity markets. We mainly did future spreads and futures butterfly trades. And along the way, I've done a lot of quantitative consulting, written white papers for Nuveen Investments, the Managed Funds Association, the International Energy Association, the World Bank, the CME Group, Organic Valley, the Nationwide Organic Dairy Co-op that's headquartered in Wisconsin. And then also I worked in the risk division of Bank of New York Mellon Wealth Management. And so that was sort of how I stayed involved in various, I mean, the world changes. And so these consulting positions allowed me to stay in the state of the art in at various types of firms. In a way, it's sort of like these are all different domains, but net net, there's sort of common. Well, in the commodity markets, there's common frameworks for analyzing things. And then I've stayed in academia, interestingly enough. And so right now I'm an honorary senior visiting fellow at Bayes Business School in London, where I co-edit an academic commodity publications at an event. I was a scholar at University of Colorado Denver Business School, where there's the J.P. Morgan Center for Commodities. I co-edited a best-selling risk book, Intelligent Commodity Investing. I've done executives. So in a way, again, there's sort of really common principles between all these jobs. So I don't, or in things that I've done. So I don't really consider, for me, there's a continuity. And so I've also done executive seminars for DePaul University, EDEC Business School, a French institution, in the Chicago Institute of Investments. And so it was, there was a period where I did a lot of lectures for people coming from Chinese financial and regulatory institutions. And so I did the executive seminars for DePaul and Chicago Institute of Investments. And then that ran its course. I mean, there are a lot of things I've done, which, you know, there was a huge need, and then that, you know, runs its course, and then it's on to do something else. So my firm also created the Premium Bancorp Index, which is calculated and distributed by S&P Dow Jones Indices. It's a diversified portfolio, equity and bond futures contracts, along with the smart allocation to commodity futures. And again, the common thread amongst all these activities is the application of quantitative and computer science techniques across a range of domains. And okay, so the interview is, or this interview series is about options. So I'll discuss option strategies at the various firms I've been associated with. So I had mentioned earlier in my career, I had worked at a Chicago proprietary trading firm. And here, the head trader had discovered a systematic options mispricing opportunity. And so during a time of high interest rates and high volatility, the cheapest to deliver bond for the futures contract changed across strikes. But there was a mispricing in that the implied volatilities in the out-of-the-money strikes was the same implied volatility that would be the case for the at-the-money cheapest to deliver. But as you're going through strikes, there's new cheapest to deliver bonds, different volatility characteristics. And so so then there was a team of four traders that would set up option strategies if they could match the pricing that was on the trading sheets. And I created the trading sheets. So then at Harvard's endowment, I saw a different kind of application of options. The portfolio managers, at least on the fixed income side, were excellent practitioners at smart macro, which means setting up, I mean, this is sort of holy grail, but setting up low risk, high reward strategies that really pay off if a macro view comes true. So the most incredible trade I saw was a contingent premium put on Deutsche Mark Lira. And so the fixed income portfolio manager, international fixed income portfolio manager, set up a structure where the strike was just outside the band of where Deutsche Mark Lira was supposed to trade. And okay, so with the contingent premium option, you only pay premium if the option ends up in the money, then it's a large premium. And so the manager figured, well, if Deutsche Mark Lira trades this band, could be that Lira, this is before the euro, would have to leave the European exchange rate mechanism, and where it would decline substantially. The option would finish in money and like way past the level of the option premium. And that's exactly that's exactly what happened. So as I'm sort of going through, I was a quant supporting traders who employed arbitrage or smart macro strategies employing options. And then, when I was at Putnam, derivatives trading was pretty unusual. And so what I found that was my value added was sort of like being a Rosetta Stone to be able to explain, okay, if you do this kind of derivatives, what that meant in plain language. So sort of like translating the hieroglyphics, i.e. into plain English. And so amongst other things, I presented to the SEC, mutual fund trustees, and institutional clients on derivatives policy. And then coming into or with my own firm, the types of option strategies that we've done are in trade construction, managing event risk, and in creating macro portfolio hedges. Okay, so I'll go through each of those three. The first being trade construction. So say one has a bullish cocoa strategy and cocoa is trading in contango. And so the entry level for the trade may be suboptimal, so you sell out of the money puts, which is basically because one has a bullish view. And then if cocoa declines, you're put into the position or the futures contract at a great level relative to where the cocoa was originally trading. So another example is is managing event risk. Consistent commodity trading tends to involve a lot of spreads where one has figured out why one has an edge. And so say one is long propane versus crude oil. One would be at risk if there was a geopolitical event and crude dramatically rallied. And so in that case, one wants sort of a hedge against the short crude leg, and one could set up a zero cost collar, buying an out of the money call financed by selling an out of money put. One can also use options in creating macro portfolio hedges. In a number of commodity futures trading strategies, you have an edge because you're taking on basically long inventory risk that commercial participants wish to lay off. Okay, so even if one's been spread strategies, there tends to be a long bias. And so one consequence is even though these trades seem different, at a macro point, one is at risk to a sharp shock in business confidence. And so, during a sharp shock to business confidence, it tends to be at least short-term interest rates rallying in expectation of rates being cut. And so, a macro portfolio hedge that we've used is going long out of the money short-term interest rate calls. Okay, so that's my summary of my career thus far, along with the types of option strategies that have been used either at firms that I worked at where I was a quant or that I've used myself in my commodity business.
Well, you've definitely done quite a bit with your background. Actually, I wanted to talk a little bit more about your background in statistics and computer science. It's not really common for someone of that background to get into the financial market. So, what kind of interested you to go in that direction?
I would say really it's because I was in Chicago, and at least when I graduated, when I was done with graduate school, there were a lot of opportunities at proprietary proprietary trading firms. Back in the day, like now, you can have an option pricing routine as an Excel add-in. But back in the day, you'd have to read Cox and Rubenstein. It was even before John Hall did his wonderful textbook. So there was a market for hiring quants for creating custom software. And then it would be regarded custom software was that you had an edge. I think overall, at least starting out, I guess it's still true. If I can, if this can, if I can swing this, I'm always interested in the state of the art activities. And so, although I ended up on the financial side through most of my career, I started out at the Artificial Intelligence Group up was Arthur Anderson, which later became Accenture. And I did that because, it was a state-of-the-art discipline.
So I know you've worked with a lot of large hedge funds and other companies with managing their risk and overseeing their derivative strategies. What do you think are some of the most important lessons you've learned while doing that?
Let's see. Okay, so I had, I have these experiences that occur over a period of years. And when you've had, excuse me, experiences that have taken place over a period of years, at least for me, it's an effort to summarize them briefly in an interesting fashion. But if I can find an article that, like, oh my gosh, they thought about this and they summarized it, I just go with that in describing the experience. So, for example, there was a internal portfolio management article that summarized the risk management process for using derivatives. And so I'll just mention it because I thought it was, rather than me going on for quite a long time, remembering idiosyncratic anecdotes, I can just go through the brief structure that's already been published. So, first of all, one needs to define the investment process in terms of risk management. Then one needs to establish clear investment objectives and the acceptable risk tolerance level. This is followed by creating a set of boundary conditions for the level of risk and the cost of risk reduction. One should assess the full range of possible outcomes of using derivatives and respective costs. Then one assesses the impact of using derivatives on the risk profile of the portfolio. And lastly, one needs to establish a monitoring protocol to measure risk, as well as developing an adjustment response mechanism. So this is one of the things that I worked on at Putnam Investments, in kind of a trial and error basis. And then later I consulted for Nevin Investments to set up a structure exactly like this, because there was a desire to hedge the interest rate risk in our $50 billion closed-end muni bond business.
So thank you for sharing more about your background. I think it's really interesting to kind of see where you started, what you've done over the years, and kind of what you're doing now. So I want to pivot our conversation to the main topic of today, which is risk management for op options portfolios. So the first question that I have is, when it comes to options traders and managing their portfolios, what are some of the different types of risks that they should be accounting for?
In terms of my experience, the way that I'd answer this question would be based on supported the software for foreign currency, over-the-counter foreign currency options traders. And so they aggregated risks across the portfolio were the Greeks. So evaluating the delta, gamma, theta, vega, and rho. And then, since this was a leveraged book, it was with also complex options, whereas you went through certain strikes for currency, then your exposure could very much change. And so it was really important on a real-time basis to evaluate those risks.
And how do you think beta comes into play when analyzing these different kind of risks?
Basically, when I classically one talks about beta, it's kind of an equity portfolio. So if you had a portfolio of stocks and wanted to hedge the overall equity portfolio, you would measure the beta of the portfolio with respect to a stock index, and then buy puts on that stock index according to the beta exposure.
And I think when it comes to newer traders, What kind of mistakes do you think they often make when they're assessing risks, of their portfolios?
I think it's sort of learning what one's on the fly, what one's risk tolerance is. And so one never wants to be stopped out of a trade because something, positions were sized too large. So mistake, well, it's more of a learning process is to really know one's own risk tolerance for engaging in any kind of trading, including in options.
And I know when we talk about risk, we always think of like bearish markets, or we're thinking the market's not going to turn out too well. But should traders also hedge their strategies when they're making bullish trades in the market?
Well, I mean, it's always judicious to have downside protection. But if one has a portfolio that's not leveraged and one's time horizon is quite large, and if say it's the stock market, which classically, I mean, there are exceptions historically, but classically, the markets do well. Especially if you also have a fraction of the portfolio in fixed income and even gold. So if the market going down isn't going to affect your lifestyle, quality of life, you have the positions sized according to what you can tolerate, then one has to think carefully about buying options, because if one does this systematically, the premiums start to really add up. Although, I mean, there's there's option strategies for hedging where you think about the how much premium you should be paying, and so classic structure is a zero cost collar. And I should double check this, but I think classically that's how Mark Cuban was able to keep his fortune in the face of dramatic stock market declines, was hedging his stock ownership with zero cost collars.
And I know we were talking about this a little bit earlier. So you obviously have a lot of experience managing risk for hedge funds and other companies. What does risk management look like from that perspective?
Okay, so this was a c compared to compared to managing one's own funds.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so when one's at a large institution, there tends to be a lot of oversight. It's a good thing. But that's, not a consideration, not a direct consideration when one's managing their own money. One needs to have a lot of internal discipline, because the external discipline can be there.
Do you think the strategies used for these larger funds can be applied to like individual retail traders, or are they more specific to these large funds?
Well, I think they can. It's just for retail to make sure that risk management, hedging, that involves paying out premium, if this is economic.
And then do you think these large hedge funds tend to be more risky, or are they more risk averse than the average trader?
Well, okay. If you're gonna stay in business for longer than a market cycle, you have to be an expert at risk. So I don't know if I'd say, risk averse or risk seeking, other than like you clear cut, figured out an edge, and then you leverage it up, and then just risk manage, apply ever more nuanced risk management evaluations against the portfolio. So you for this type of business, though, obviously you have to be able to tolerate risk, or else if you can't tolerate risk, then you wouldn't have the mental capacity to keep on doing the strategies across market cycles. So I guess what I'm trying to think is, let's tell my risk averse. I mean, the nature of having like a derivatives fund is that you're an expert on taking on and managing risk. It's like your profession, really.
So I want to talk a little bit more about portfolios. What are some option strategies that traders can use to diversify their market portfolio and then also reduce risk?
Well, I what's zero cost collars, put spreads.
And do you think constructing a portfolio that has maybe different assets, for example, like stocks, commodities, futures, would you think that would hedge risk efficiently, or could it maybe create more uncertainty for a trader just if they don't really know how to handle these different underlying assets?
What I've found in my back tests that have worked out of sample is that it is possible to construct diversified portfolios. The best that I've been able to do with scalable instruments is, the peak to trough drawdown is still like 20%. So, but on the other hand, the only way to make money is to bear risk. And one can go through why, what the different economic drivers are, where constructing a diversified portfolio means that at least the year-to-year results can have negative results that are, well, pretty small as the case may be. So what I've found, and 'cause this was basically the idea with the trade construction of the Bancor index, is that stocks, bonds, and then commodities, which toggle between oil and gold based on some fundamental characteristics, you can't get rid of, you can't get around the peak to trough drawdowns, but you can like reduce the year-to-year negative results to negative single digits. So diverse portfolio construction can go a long way to reducing risk. But if one's making money from just straightforward beta, that means that one can't leverage because well, peak drop drawdown of tw negative 20%, you'd leverage that three times, that would be a pretty ugly result.
And once a trader kind of like does some research on risk, starts constructing their portfolio, has different strategies, things like that, how often should they be kind of checking their portfolio or evaluating their portfolio?
Well, if one is once created a leverage strategy, then this is a full-time job. But if it's unleveraged, daily is fine.
So that's the main questions I have for you today. I have a few final questions just to kind of wrap up our conversation a little bit. But what advice would you pass along to somebody who's kind of looking to get started in the derivatives industry?
Well, so I guess this would be based on my own experience. Just a couple anecdotes first. So when I was at the Boston Bank, the head trader training consisted of don't F up. And then when I went to the Boston Mutual Fund Company, during my first week, I was put before six SEC examiners to explain the firm's derivatives policy. But I was lucky earlier in my career when I was at the Chicago proprietary trading firm to be mentored. I mean, I just for years I was grateful for that. And that really set me up for my later job experiences. So if one can find a job where one's mentored, I mean, that's golden.
And you might know, but we do choose a different topic every week for the show. So, do you have any recommendations for a topic that we could cover? Or also, if you have any recommendations of maybe someone else we could bring on the show, that would be great.
Well, I mean, something I'd be interested in because it's kind of opaque to me is what the option strategies are that are employed in Chinese futures markets, and then how is I'm an English speaker. I know some French and Latin, but I don't know Mandarin. So if they're also find out the sources to follow these markets. And then, in terms of who I'd find interesting, if you haven't already had people from DRW or Balyasny, that would be, traders or risk managers, that'd be very interesting. And also, Jody Gunsberg at the Cboe has enormous amount of experience and is always interesting to listen to. And she's on, on the financial television networks, a fair amount.
I know my dad is trying to learn a little bit of Mandarin, so maybe I can recruit him for that. But so that's all I have for you today. I want to thank you for coming on and kind of sharing some more knowledge. I know I'm sure our viewers learned a lot, and I know I learned a lot. And for our viewers, I'll see you all in the next episode. If you're hungry for more options content, make sure to subscribe to the JLN YouTube channel and check out our social media accounts. Be sure to check out our website, JohnLothianNews.com, MarketsWiki, and the John Lothian newsletter for more content.